Today's Teisho will be on Case 51 in the Book of Serenity. Case 51 is entitled Phions, Boat or Land. Introduction. In mundane truth, how many people have been deluded? In Buddhist truth, how many people have been deluded? If they suddenly become one, can you then define delusion and enlightenment? Case. Phaon asked Elder Zhao, did you come by boat or land? Zhao said, by boat. Phaon said, where is the boat? Zhao said, the boat is on the river. After Zhao had withdrawn, Phaon turned and asked a monk standing by, tell me, did that monk have eyes or not? Verse. Water doesn't wash water. Gold isn't changed for gold. Find a horse without knowing its color. Enjoy the lute without the strings. Tying knots, drawing trigrams, when there are such things, completely lost is the true mind of original. Is the true original mind. So I want to thank everybody for coming to practice this morning and doing such a wonderful job. Deep sitting, really wonderful. So this is a for those of you who are new to Zen, this is what is called a koan. Koans are stories used in teaching Zen that usually involve some kind of a breakthrough. Usually they involve a teacher or a student, a teacher and a student, and they usually involve some kind of insight or breakthrough. In other words, you know, we're all struggling to wake up, to free ourselves from our illusions, and it's not easy task, right? We have to do a lot of practice, we have to work through many obstacles, and koans are these little stories that describe moments when somebody has broken through a barrier in herself or broken through a barrier in himself, see. So these koans are from longer stories, longer narratives. So there are stories about Linji. And there's something called the Linji Lu, the Book of Rinzai. And it involves many stories about his life and his encounters. But Engo, Wan Wu, the editor of this collection, the Book of Serenity, went through all these Zen classics and he sort of took out some scissors and he cut out key moments in the stories of these different teachers, moments when they had really had a breakthrough, when they had really achieved awakening, see. So, you know, it's possible to teach Zen by having you read a book about the history of Zen and the principles of Zen. And if you want to read such a book, please do. It would be really interesting. But it wouldn't be much help to you as you're trying to break through your own barriers, see? So what these koans do is instead of telling you what Zen is about, they're showing you what Zen is about, right? They're showing you. So it's like we open the book and we go to a koan, and the koan is like taking us to a moment when a student is talking to a teacher. And the teacher says something to the student and it just clicks, right? Sometimes in life, you're just going along, and then you see something or you hear something and it just clicks, right? And so these are stories about the moment when something clicks for a Zen student. And instead of just reading about abstract principles, we're looking at real moments, like snapshots, or like a little video of how this person, what this person heard, and undergoes some kind of process and then has this insight. And we don't know exactly what the mental process of the student is. See, in this case, Feon met this monk. Feon was a great Zen master, and in China, and he met this monk whose name is Elder Zhao, who's like a very senior monk himself, and he's come to visit Feon at Feon's temple. And Feon says, "Oh, did you come by boat or land?" See, now that's, you know, if I'm a Zen master and you're a very senior Zen monk, and you've been practicing for 40 years, what I want to know is, what barriers have you broken through? How deep is your insight? Have you seen the source? Have you seen the source? Buddha nature, face to face, see. So Zen teachers will pose questions to students that are designed to assess the quality of their insight. They could just say, "What's the quality of your insight?" But what they really want to see is what the person actually can do when confronting a barrier. See, when confronting a barrier. So the Zen teacher often is testing the other person, throwing up a barrier and seeing if the person can exhibit an enlightened response, an awakened response. If yes, good. If no, back to the cushion, see. So in this case, Feon has met this senior monk named Elder Zhao. And he wants to know, I wonder, Elder Zhao, everybody says, you know, he's been practicing for a long time. Is he awake? How awake is he? So Feon asks him a question which seems innocent, but it's not innocent. He said, "How did you come?" In other words, as you enter this moment, as you are in, how did you enter this moment? How did you enter this moment? You can say, what does that even mean? How did you enter this moment? But you know, we're always entering the moment, always, because there's always a new moment, right? And how we approach the new moment is very important. So you know, you might have to do something you don't want to do. You know, you have to go on a job interview, and you know, you buy some clothes for the job interview, some special clothes, and you rehearse your lines, you know, what you're going to say with your sister or something, and you know, but then you stay up all night, you know, you try to sleep but you can't sleep, and you toss and you turn, and you're going to come into this job interview, see, and you need the job. It's something you've wanted. And you know, by the time you get to the job interview, you're so stressed out, right? You're so nervous that the interviewer will pitch a slow ball to you, right? Just something like, why are you interested in this job, right? And instead of answering very quickly and saying, you know, I've been training for this job all my life. You know, this is something I've dreamed of having, you know, and here's what I've done to get ready for it. You know, you stammer and you go in circles, and you know, in that case, that's happened to all of us. You know, your anxieties and you freeze. Your anxieties make you freeze at a key moment. So how you enter the moment is, in this case, in entering the moment, in this case, you haven't been, you know, you haven't had the impact you wanted to have, right? Maybe you don't get the job. So we're always entering a moment, right? And sometimes we're entering the moment with dread or fear, or we're entering the moment with anticipation. And sometimes we're open to the moment. Right? You know, it's like, I'm just going to see what happens, right? And, you know, frankly, a more awakened person is able to be open to the moment more often than somebody who hasn't been who hasn't worked through her barriers, you see. So, so in this case, Feyan is pitching a question to this monk, and he's really not asking about the monk's mode of transportation. He's asking about how the monk enters the moment. And maybe the monk could be nervous, right? I mean, Feyan is a very famous Zen master, and he's having an interview with this, he's having an interview, and he wants the very famous Zen master maybe to acknowledge that he's a senior monk who's really made a lot of progress. So Feyan pitches him a question that looks innocent, but it's not. He said, how did you come by land or boat? In other words, how do you enter the moment, you who have been practicing Zen for 30 years? And Zhao says, by boat. So, you know, we don't know what the hell is going on with this koan, you know, but maybe that's a good answer. We don't know what the boat is, right? But Feyan says, oh, where's the boat? And Zhao says, the boat is on the river. Now if you have you know anything about Zen, that's a very deep response, right? So Feyan is asking Zhao, how do you enter the moment? By boat? Do you enter the moment on a boat, or do you enter the moment on land? We don't know what that means. Zhao says rather confidently, by boat. And then Feyan pushes a little harder. He comes back and he says, oh, where is that boat? And Zhao says, it's on the water. So you know, none of this makes much sense if you haven't done a lot of Zen practice. And even if you've done a lot of Zen practice, it doesn't make much sense at first. You know, what you have to do is sit down on the cushion and just internalize this little story. In other words, you know, in order to answer this koan, so to speak, you have to be open to what it's pointing to. You have to be open to the experience that it's describing or illustrating, demonstrating. There's an inner process that we don't know yet, but that's going on in Zhao's mind. And we need to know what it is, but how do we get access to that? Because we don't know Zhao. You know, we don't know Zhao. We've never heard of this guy until we read the koan. See, but the whole point of Zen is that you have enlightened wisdom in yourself. See? So you may not be Zhao, you know, but you have the same mind as Zhao if you just look. So we sit down on the cushion, see, and we go into samadhi, deep meditative concentration. If you haven't yet learned how to get into samadhi, not much can be accomplished. You really have to work on watching your breath until you can get into really deep samadhi. And one sign that a person is in really deep samadhi is that she sits motionless on the cushion. You can see some people on the cushion, they move around a little bit, that's natural. But when they're moving around a little bit during a sit, they're not in samadhi. You know, when people enter deep samadhi, it's as though they've emptied out, right? It's as though they're empty. It's like the body has been planted on the cushion and then it's emptied out, see? And when that happens, you're in deep samadhi. It may even feel like your body is emptying out. So what happens when you enter deep samadhi also is that your mind goes blank, right? And you enter an altered state of consciousness, right? Altered state of consciousness. And in that state of consciousness, you're no longer thinking in an ordinary way. In other words, you could approach this koan by going, what's a boat? What's a river? What could those represent? I see. But that's not an appropriate way to address the koan. To address the koan, you have to be able to go through the mental process that Zhao went through. See? So you have to kind of like become Zhao in this case, right? And what you do in this case is you say, you could say that turning, you might just sit on the cushion, go into samadhi and say, boat or land, boat or land, boat or land, boat or land. And for a long time, nothing is going to happen. You know, you're just going to sit there and go, God, what am I doing? Why am I wasting my time with this stupid boat or land? But remember, I said, you go into an altered state of consciousness, see? And it's like you're asking your dynamic unconscious mind to give you the answer. And the dynamic unconscious mind doesn't work rationally. It doesn't think things through. It has a deeper process, right? And it often works through association, like associational processing. So boat or land, you know, it's like all of a sudden you'll know what boat or land is all about, right? You will, not necessarily intellectually, but you begin to go through this aha moment, or this, it's like a switch goes on in your head, right? And it may take a month, it may take 6 months, but all of a sudden there's like this switch goes off in your head, see? And it's like a little door inside yourself, which was closed, is now open. This is how koans work. So, did you come by boat or land? Zhao said, by boat. Where is the boat? And Zhao said, the boat is on the river. That seems to be a really good answer, but we don't know why. After Zhao had withdrawn, Feiyan turned to a monk. So Feiyan's now, first of all, Feiyan tested Elder Zhao by asking him that question. And now he's testing the elder monk, asking him a question. He wants to see if the elder monk has any clue about what happened either. And we don't know. We don't know what the monk said next. So that's how koans work. And today I want to say a little bit about this koan, and most of what I say about the koan will be helpful generally in your Zen practice, but it won't be helpful in answering the koan. So I hope you continue to practice Zen, and if you do, one day we will work on this koan. And the little talk I'm giving today will not help you even in the slightest, okay? Because you have to process that koan in a totally different way, using your dynamic unconscious mind. But all the same, let me just say a few things about the koan. You know, lots of people begin to do Zen because they're unhappy or confused, or confused, right? And I have to say that's definitely how it was for me. I really felt like my life was absolutely chaotic. You know, really felt like my life was chaotic. I didn't know what I was doing with my life, and I felt swept along by things that I couldn't control. And every time I would get, you know, I would get overwhelmed by something I couldn't control, it would make me sad, right? And it was often happening that I felt, you know, out of control or overwhelmed by things. So I was sad a fair amount of time, right? And so, you know, starting to, I was fishing around for something to hold on to, something that would help me, because I just felt like I was being swept along on this current, right, like on a river, and I couldn't grab a rock. I was just being swept along. And one day I heard about this Tibetan place. It was a Tibetan meditation center near the campus where I was going to school. And I started sitting there in the afternoon, and I would just go in. I read a book on how to meditate. And they had meditation cushions and mats, and the door was unlocked. You could just go in and sit down and meditate. And I would go in there, and I would sit for 20 minutes and do what it said in the book, and then leave, right? And one day I went in, and there was another person there, and he said, you know, I just heard that this Japanese Zen master has just arrived and is giving lectures at the University of Washington on Wednesday nights in the art department. So at 7 o'clock on a Wednesday night, I went over to the art department, and there was this Japanese monk, and they had Zen meditation. And the first time I did Zen meditation, it was so difficult for me because I had been practicing meditation on my own, but like for 15 or 20 minutes. And when I went to this meditation session on Wednesday night at the university, they sat for 3 periods of meditation. The first one was half an hour, the second was 25 minutes, and the third was 20 minutes, which if you're a member of our group, that might feel familiar because that's what we often do, see. And you know, just getting through that second meditation session was so hard, so hard. I remember literally like being covered in sweat. So I went to that first session, and I went out of there thinking, well, I don't think I'll come back. But there was something so, you know, I actually came back, and I couldn't even say why. But there was something so interesting about what happened on the cushion when I was meditating, even though it was so hard. And I would come back, like I started coming back every Wednesday and doing this. And something about it was so appealing. And then, you know, I kept doing it, and I heard about the Seattle Zen Center, which had brought this teacher to Seattle, also had a house, and they would sit in the morning. And I would get up, and I would catch the bus to the Zen House, as it was called, and I would meditate like from 7 in the morning until 8:15 or 8:20. Then I'd go off to my classes because I was at the university. And, you know, little by little, I felt so much better in my life. You know, even though it was very hard to meditate so much and to sit motionless for an hour and a half every time I sat down on the cushion, you know, I felt really like for the first time I wasn't being swept along. I wasn't being swept along by the current. You know, it was like I suddenly felt like I had planted myself on solid ground. On like solid ground, and it was so wonderful. You know, I was a kind of person who, generally speaking, as an undergraduate, didn't get up early in the morning. I would even pick my classes sometime. It was like if it was an 8:30 class, no way. I just wouldn't even think about taking it. You know, I would pick my classes sort of in the middle of the day or later in the afternoon, so I didn't have to get up early. But I started getting up early, and it was not easy. It was, you know, getting up at like, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning was a shock, you know. But I would go to the Zen Center, the Zen House, and, you know, we would drive over there, and a friend of mine would pick me up, and we'd go by Lake Washington, which is this lake on the edge of Seattle, and it would be, you know, in the early morning, it would be absolutely like a mirror. Sometimes it was so clear, and you could see the clouds reflected in the lake. And the lake was so still, and when I would come in and sit down on the cushion, at first my mind was like so much chatter, like blah, blah, blah. And I'd have all these anxieties, like, oh, what am I doing here? I have to study, I have this test, you know, blah, blah, blah. And after like 15 or 20 minutes, my mind would become as serene and placid as Lake Washington. And I would feel so safe and grounded that it was wonderful, wonderful. And, you know, it was like, this is it. This is my path, right? You know, because nothing else in my life made me feel that way. Nothing else in my life gave me that kind of feeling of being safe and grounded. It's like there's a poet named, a British, American poet named T.S. Eliot, who has this poem, and he refers to what he calls the still point in the turning world. See, and T.S. Eliot wasn't a Zen Buddhist, but you know, I felt like I had found the still point in the turning world. See, so I felt like I had been swept along by this raging river, uncontrollably, you know. And that's actually happened to me, you know. I mean, literally, when I was hiking in the Pecos Mountains, when I was, after I was a young man and I was hiking with a friend in the Pecos Mountains, I was, after like 7 days of hiking, I got in this creek, this stream, pretty fast flowing mountain stream. And I was trying to clean myself up before we went into town, and I was trying to maintain my footing, but the stream was so powerful and the rocks were slimy, right? So I lost my footing and it actually swept me down. That was terrifying, right? I'm so lucky I didn't bash my head or break something. I for some reason I grabbed onto something and I was able to hold on. It was really like amazing, so lucky. But my life felt like that until I started doing Zen. And then it was like I would, no matter how crazy, first of all, you know, if you want to do Zen, you have to be willing to have a regular schedule. So if you practice once in a while, you will not make any progress, right? So if you say, well, I'll sit when I need it, you know, you'll never practice. And if you say, I'll practice on my own, it's very unlikely you will practice. You know, most people who try to do this on their own don't succeed. And if you don't have a schedule, you won't succeed. So if you say, I'm going to practice with other people, that helps enormously. And if you say, I'm going to practice regularly, you know, it's not just about practicing regularly. It's about suddenly, you know, there are these moments in your life where you're not being swept along insanely. You sit down on the cushion and you ground yourself, and it's like you enter the still point in a turning world. And this is so wonderful. It's so reassuring and powerful to be like just in that place, motionless. Everything around you can be like a tornado, but you can ground yourself in this. It's like the eye of the tornado, which is like this summer day in the middle of this frenzy. And if you make time for this practice and you have regular practice with other people, see, it's like you're never far from that still point in the turning world. And every time things get a little crazy, you come back to the cushion and you ground yourself. And this is a way of life, right? This is like this is a Zen way of life. I think it's a superior way of life myself. I absolutely adore it. You know, you only live, maybe 80 years. What a pity not to spend at least some of those years on the cushion, right, in that beautiful stillness, that imperturbable calm. You know, we do sesshin, right? We do these meditation retreats where people sit for 8 hours a day. And, you know, the first couple of days are challenging because, you know, you get tired, your legs hurt. You know, if you do a lot of meditation, sometimes your legs hurt. Sometimes they can hurt all day, right? But then around day three, you get into this space, this mental space, which is absolutely imperturbable. It's like you're in, it's the world around you could be in flames or exploding, and you're absolutely still and grounded and calm. See? And that's priceless, right? You know, in the worst moments of my life, I have gone down to my cushion and sat and entered this still, serene place, and it's like deliverance, right? It's like deliverance. that's the end, what the Buddha called the end of suffering, right? Suffering and the end of suffering. Okay, so I was swept along by a wild river, and then I found a way of grounding myself solidly on, I found a put planting myself solidly on solid ground. I always think about this great Lakota chief named Sitting Bull. Sitting Bull. I don't know if you've heard of Sitting Bull, but he was a truly great man. And, a Tibetan teacher I know pointed this out. He said, in Tibet, calling somebody Sitting Bull would be considered a great honor. It's what they might call a great Rinpoche, a great meditation master. You know, the idea, a bull is this massive animal, right? A buffalo bull, probably weighs 400 pounds. And when it sits on the ground, it's like this solid, it's like you become a mountain, right? You become the mountain. So this Tibetan teacher said, calling somebody Sitting Bull is a great compliment. It's like you are unshakable in your serenity. So, when Feihan asked Elder Zhao, did you come by boat or land? Zhao could have said, I came by land. I came by land. I used to come by water. I used to be, on the raging river. And now, I'm solidly planted on the ground. So I put one foot in front of the other on the solid ground. But Zhao says, I came by boat. And Feihan says, where's the boat? And Zhao says, it's on the river. It's on the raging river. The boat is on the raging river. And so, the koan's kind of about this, right? It's like, wait a minute. I thought you said it's bad to be on the raging river, and it's good to be on solid ground. To be swept along wildly on this stream is horrible. It's horrifying, and it's depressing. To be able to be in this imperturbable place at all times is deliverance, right? I thought you said that. I thought I just said that. And it's all true. See, it's all true. But it's not the whole story. It's not the whole story. So, in the beginning, we call Zen the path or the great way. Zen is the great way. The great way, we recite the Xinxin Ming, the verses on the heart mind. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. This is the great way. And the great way begins by learning how to stabilize our minds and enter a deep samadhi, and reach a point of imperturbability, which is absolutely indispensable and beyond belief. If it ever happens that we have a nuclear war, if I have time, I'm going to get right to my cushion and sit down and enter deep samadhi. So important. And if I'm lucky enough, when I die, I want to be able to enter deep samadhi and not be swept along by all of this madness at the end of your life. But, that's not the end of the story. When we practice entering samadhi, we actually do a koan called the mu koan, the emptiness koan. So initially we meditate on the breath for maybe a couple of years until we can develop deep samadhi power. See, samadhi, being able to go into deep empty concentration, no thinking, is so important. So if you could just do it shallowly, you're not well prepared for life or for anything. If you can get into that imperturbable place very deeply, that's really wonderful. So the teacher, a good teacher, will want you to be able to get into deep samadhi. So you might be working on your breath for a while. But eventually the teacher will want you to go into mushin, we say, emptiness. So instead of watching your breath, you'll watch an empty space at the end of your mind. At the end of your breath, if you look at your mind, there's a little blank space. And you just want to keep focusing your mind, your attention on that empty space at the end of your breath, empty blank screen at the end of your breath. And, you get you call we focus on that emptiness, and we focus on that emptiness. You know, at Sesshin we do it 9 hours a day, 8 hours a day, and it's so still and empty in that place. It's so still and empty. It's so serene. It's like not nothing. There isn't even a speck of dust in that place, right? There's, when you're really there, there's nothing. The last of the senses to disappear is hearing, right? But even hearing, sometimes you don't even, your mind is so blank, you're not aware of anything. And, you know, early Buddhists thought that was liberation. They were mistaken. But some early Buddhists mistakenly thought that was liberation, because you now know how there's no suffering in that state, right? There's suffering and an end to suffering. But you know, if you stay in that emptiness, you notice something interesting. If you stay in that emptiness long enough, you notice there's like a vibration, like a little vibration. And if you just stay in that emptiness long enough, that vibration gets to be more powerful. It's like a vibration. The longer you stay, eventually, the more the vibration becomes noticeable and even powerful. It's like, you know, and lots of people who have this happen think, oh, something's wrong with my practice. I'm in emptiness, and now I feel nervous, or I feel like something's annoying me. You know, my mind should be still. It shouldn't be moving, but now it's moving with this vibration. But you know, the more you go into emptiness, the more powerful that vibration becomes. And in fact, we actually practice something called calling mu. It's like out of that emptiness comes this energy. See, if Buddhism were just about stillness and emptiness, it would be of very limited value. You see, but actually, it's not just stillness and emptiness are stages on the path. But you know, when you stay in emptiness long enough, you begin to notice that there's this energy, like arising out of nothing. It's like I was reading this Einstein quote, which is probably bogus. You know, the internet is filled with these bogus Einstein quotes. But he said, we're really just vibrating energy, you know. And that's true. We're really just vibrating energy. There's no question. And when you go into deep mushin and you stay in that emptiness, you begin to be aware of this like vibration. It's like you're ascending to a higher frequency, right? It's like you're ascending to a higher frequency, and now you're becoming aware of the vibration. And it's almost like being on a higher frequency, right? It's like now everything starts to vibrate at a higher frequency. And you know, if you stay with this energy, it's tremendously powerful. It's a tremendously powerful energy. So you know, as you become one with that energy, you're filled with this sense of fearlessness and, you know, power. You know, we Zen people tap into that energy. We connect with that energy in our practice. It's so important. So yes, stillness is crucial, you know, but when you get into that stillness, you find there's this other side to emptiness, which is this energy. And harmonizing yourself with this energy is like ascending to a different frequency. It's like you're like, you know, the normal person is sort of voop, you know, and then when you begin to enter deep emptiness, it's like you're purifying the apparatus, right? And so now, see, much higher frequency. And everything is transformed, everything. It's like, you know, when you're operating at that like higher frequency, you know, you get off the cushion and everything seems so alive, so radiant and alive. You know, so when you went to the cushion, everything seemed insane and out of control and maybe frightening, and you find that stillness, But if you stay in that stillness, you begin to enter like the, you begin to operate at a higher frequency. And when you begin to operate at a higher frequency and you get off your cushion and you walk around, everything is like so pure, so clear and clean. It's like a different world now. So you know, it's a necessary part of Zen practice, right? To want to get out of the madness. You know, if you listen to the news, you know, it's just an endless madhouse, right? It's just one day after another, government shutdown. It's just, you know, insane. And if you're in a situation where I have to say, I really admire my sister, right? Because she works with cancer patients. She's a nurse practitioner and works with a lot of terminal people. And you know, she has her own ways of finding that stillness. You know, it's so challenging. You know, every patient you work with is going to die. You know, that's really challenging, right? And she's a very kind person, very generous. She wouldn't do that work. You know, so being able to ground herself in stillness is real liberation. That's really the path. That's really the first stage. The first stage of the path is being able to get, you know, the Buddha said that, you know, basically, when we're in our ordinary consciousness, everything is, the impermanence of everything makes it feel like the world is on fire. The Buddha gave this sermon called, it's often called the fire sermon, right, this sutra. And basically he says, you know, everything seems to be on fire, right? Uncontrollable. The eye, you know, the taste, the touch, all the senses, the mind is on fire, right? It's like, where can I rest? Where can I rest my mind? You know, my mind is on fire. You know, people use alcohol. You know, if you get drunk, you have a little interval where you feel like your mind is not on fire, or, you know, you get stoned, you know, which is really kind of a poor decision, frankly, you know. But, you know, you stupefy yourself long enough, you feel like you're not on fire anymore. So the first part of Zen practice is learning how to enter deep emptiness, deep stillness, stillness. The stillness, deep stillness. But, you know, deep stillness is helpful, but the world is a world of impermanence, of constant change. And if we hold on to deep stillness, the world of a constant change becomes more frightening, not less. See? So it's very important not to stay in that place of stillness. If you crave stillness, please practice Zen. Get into deep samadhi and enjoy it, soak it up. But at some point, it's no longer adequate to be in that place. You're too separate from things. There isn't any separation. To participate, to experience a world as your body, as one life, you have to vibrate at a higher frequency, you know? And that means embracing that energy, that purified energy in emptiness. So in this koan, you know, basically Feon is testing Elder Zhao. He wants to, basically, Zhao arrives at the monastery and Feon wants to know, is this a guy who's hung up on stillness or not? And he could just say, hey, do you like stillness? And if Zhao said, yeah, man, it's the best, he would know where he is. But it's not really the Zen style is a little less direct than that, because it's too easy a question, right? Maybe he knows he's not supposed to like stillness. So how does he really feel? So Feon asks him a question that's a little bit more complicated than that. He says, how did you come here? How do you enter the moment? Do you enter the moment by boat, or do you enter the moment by land? Are you afraid of the river or not? See, basically. And Zhao says, I'm not afraid of the river. I am the river. I am the river. See? And that's a damn good answer. See? So Zhao goes. And I think Feiyan is impressed because, you know, ultimately we are the river. After Zhao had withdrawn, Feiyan turned and asked a monk standing by, what do you think? He says, did that guy, Zen speak, he says, did that monk have eyes or not? He means, does he have open eyes? Is he awake or not? See. Okay. Verse, water doesn't wash water. Gold isn't exchanged for gold. Find a horse without knowing its color. Enjoy the loot without strings. Tying knots, drawing trigrams. When there are such things, completely lost is the pure mind of the original person. So what he's really saying there is that, you know, anytime we try to separate ourselves from what's happening, we become prisoners of what's happening. You know, whenever we try to protect ourselves from change, we make change into our enemy. But change is everything. It's who we are. It's what we are. So basically, you know, we devise all of these strategies to protect ourselves from the future, from the moment. But every time we do that, we're sort of like closing ourselves off from reality. But, you know, the best way to greet the next moment, which is always unpredictable, is to embrace it fully, whatever it is. It sounds, you know, if you're going to die, you might as well die, right? Why be half-hearted about it? You know? If you're going to live, you might as well live. Why be half-hearted about it? You know, so being wholehearted means everything is helping me wake up. Every moment is another opportunity to wake up. So whatever the moment is, everything is helping me wake up.